It was Monday morning. I sat in my office reading the lectionary text for the 6th week of Easter. Reading John 15 aloud, I came to verse 11. I have said these things so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. I stopped short. I read it again. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Joy. Do others see me as joyful? Did I feel joyful on that Monday morning? Is Christ's joy really in me and is it complete? And then as I read the rest of this text, how could Jesus be talking about joy in that moment when rejection, suffering, and death await him the next day? Plus, I was still mulling over in my mind the table discussion from the previous Friday night conversation about guns that we had here at PMC. In our table conversation, what troubled me is the assumption of fear and anxiety in our culture. And so, therefore, because of that fear and anxiety, which I agree with, is present in our society, the logic then seems to be we live in a fearful society. Therefore, violence is a necessary evil at worst, or a viable solution which could be pursued by even arming more people. And someone then said, I'm a better driver because if I get cut off and if I cut someone else off in the traffic, I fear that they may have a gun and shoot me. So therefore, I'm a better driver. And I was like, this is supposed to be a civil conversation, and I'm working hard to understand this logic. And I just said, that's not the world I want to live in. Fearful, diligent, vigilant, and potentially violent. Then, as I was doing some research about joy, I came across some of the work of Jürgen Moltmann, a German theologian who's now well up into his 90s, who 50 years ago, at kind of the height of the Vietnam War, wrote a book on joy. But now, reflecting back on that years later, Moltmann says this, and I quote, "For me now, hope is anticipated joy, and anxiety is anticipated terror. Today, at least in Germany," reflecting on his own context, "we live by anxiety and terror. I want to live in hope of anticipated joy." End of quote. Jürgen Moltmann, so do I. The question then is, how do we find ways to joy when we are confronted with more messages that are designed to make us feel afraid of anticipated terror? This morning on the way to church, I had to think, okay, I'm preaching about joy. Do I feel much joy this morning? I had the radio on just because it's always on. NPR, listening to some news report. And I told Mary, I got to turn this off. Robbing me of any speck of joy that I might have. But would you say that you're a joyful person? Do you anticipate joy? Or do you anticipate terror? Would others see you as a joyful person? Would they see us as a Christian community, as a joyful community? In my thinking about joy this week, I came across the Theology of Joy and Good Life Project, an endeavor of Yale University Center for Faith and Culture. This project, in the last number of years, beginning in 2014 and culminating this last year, brought scholars together from a variety of disciplines around the subject of joy from a variety of faith traditions. The project was funded by a large grant with the goal of restoring joy to the center of the Christian reflection on the nature of the good life. These planning the event, in observing the church today in our society, observe that when we think about the church and when people in our culture hear about the church and hear about the Christian faith in general, they're not automatically thinking about joy. More often, people think of the joy of the church as majoring in fear and not joy. So, how would you describe joy? I'll let you think about that a little bit while I talk about a few of the ways that I think about joy, and then I want you to add your piece of wisdom to our reflection before we then come back and look at the scripture. It seems to me that joy is found in relationships. I've asked a couple of people in preparation, what is it that you think of when you think about joy? And one of the things that I heard stories about interactions with grandchildren, getting a daily Tiny Beans message where you get a picture or a video of a loved one, the laughter of a baby, the love of a parent toward a newborn child, the joy of just sitting with a loved one, drinking a cup of coffee. Joy found in relationships. Love of God is a root of joy. Human love, an expression of that love of God. I think it's also found in the ordinary things of life. Noticing those ordinary things and seeing joy in them. The yellow finch at the bird feeder. This morning, as Mary and I were looking out the window toward the bird feeder, suddenly a red fox came running up. And I was so surprised. I said, "Mary, a fox!" The bright moon out the window, the flowering plants, the budding trees, the call or an email of encouragement from a friend, time spent together with friends laughing and enjoying each other's company, the community of being together as our ministry team yesterday on Wayne and Donella's back porch and reflecting on our common life together and the importance and the value of wonderful leaders and a wonderful congregation. Joy has an abiding underlying sense of well-being of oneself and the world and the choices that one has made throughout a lifetime, not all of them good choices, but realizing that even those choices that were not good choices were ultimately used by God to bring about God's purposes in our lives. The kind of human flourishing. But joy can also be spontaneous and a gift, pure joy, being surprised by joy. Joy not as a goal, not something that you necessarily work toward, but a fruit of the Spirit, a gift, but rooted in love and joy and hope. But that joy is also something to be pursued. It's a virtue to be practiced. Brené Brown, the author and TED Talk person that you've perhaps heard, reflected a lot on vulnerability, but also reflected on joy. And in a little YouTube video I saw of her, she talks about the relationship between gratitude and joy. As we practice gratitude, she finds that her joy increases. I still like to remember, and I hope I didn't get your permission, Terry, to say this, but a few years ago, Terry had this discipline of sending out a daily gratitude list, the part of her journey, and I loved getting that daily email. And she taught me things about joy in the ordinary stuff of life. She taught me it's good and great to feel grateful for chapstick. Now, for those who listen to John's gospel, as we heard it this morning, this passage from John's gospel is taken as Jesus' farewell message to his disciples. Oh, wait a minute. I was going to ask you for your responses and joy. I don't want to rob you of that joy of responding. So what are your reflections on what is joy? What do you think of? Anyone? Just popcorn up. Yes, Terry, back there.
I was just going to say, when I ran up here, I was thinking as I drove past the farm that I used to live on, that I used to love in the warm weather to hear the meadow grass blow in the breeze. And that really filled me with joy. So I think nature.
Perceived in the ordinariness of the beauty of life given to us. Yes, we are. It's rooted in relationship. That's just, yes, we are.
Yesterday I was playing in the weeds, but just being outside in the outdoors in the sunshine was wonderful.
Yes.
Yesterday on our walk, kind of a spontaneous joy. We're still trying to figure out. I think we've come to the conclusion that we saw a Baltimore oriole on the path, but it was a bird with black and orange. At first we thought it was a butterfly, but then we noticed it was a bird, but it was kind of hiding. But it was just like sheer joy, because you don't expect to see that kind of a bird very often.
That gift, that surprise by joy. Oh.
And she said yes.
Oh.
And so his joy, of course, gives me joy.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say the smiles and the warmth during passing the peace this morning, as everyone spread out and greeted one another with such enthusiasm.
Sitting on this pew this morning.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for those responses. Invite more opportunity as you're thinking about this and perhaps in the break to express your sense of joy to each other. Now, John's gospel is set in the context of Jesus' farewell address to his disciples. The night before his cruel execution on the Roman cross, a collusion of the Roman Empire and the dominant religious systems of the day. And he reviews here several important themes. The key to following Jesus' commandments is to act in love. Such love, he's saying, is not going to be easy. It's sometimes about laying down one's life for a friend. And Jesus chooses his disciples there and appoints them to go and bear fruit. He gives them the promise of his presence with them. so that what they ask will be given by God. And worked into the midst of those reminders about love and faithfulness and the strong message of abiding in God, the disciples come then to this surprising word from Jesus, this word joy. Now, if we understand the command to love on these terms in the context of this difficult discipleship, you would not necessarily imagine that there would be this sentence in here about joy. My joy might be in you and your joy complete. It almost seems oddly placed, and maybe that's what drew my attention this week. How can there be joy in sacrifice and doing without and putting others ahead of oneself? And then I got to thinking, so was Jesus joyful? Is that my perception of who Jesus was as he walked this earth? And I think Jesus, even a quick cruise back through John's gospel, we find those indications that Jesus, in fact, was a joyful person. We find him very early on at a wedding, and he sees the wine supply is getting low, and he acts on that. He seems to tease or just have a little fun with the Pharisees, with plays on words, giving wry responses to challenging questions, at times defying the laws of nature with delightful extravagance. He lived life, loved life, enjoyed eating and drinking with strangers, was accused of doing that, in fact, a little too much at times. He basked in friendships and welcomed the hospitality of close friends. He brought healing and hope to the broken and sorrowful. Jesus was fully human and invited us to live into our full humanity. He gave, he received, he grew weary, and yes, I think he also grew impatient. And yes, I think his love was one of immeasurable joy because of his life rooted in God. I love the artistic rendering of Jesus with head back in full joyful laughter. And so to these, his disciples, which he had shared so much of his life, he gives them these hard words, but also wants them to have his joy. And I ask again, how can Jesus be joyful in the face of impending death? How can the disciples even think about joy in a time like this? And still, Jesus assures them that although his life is sometimes one of sacrifice and pain, it's also a life of joy. And for me, it begins to emerge a picture that joy and sorrow are not mutually exclusive. That self-sacrifice and discipleship are embedded with joy. Jesus says this about joy immediately after he instructs his disciples about abiding in the vine. Using this vineyard image of a grape arbor, he speaks of vine and branches and draws this connection between our life with God and our fruitfulness. And may I add, our joy. So Jesus instructs these disciples to abide, to stay connected to the source that grew out of his connection with God. We might say that Jesus was modeling God as much as we seek to model Jesus. The joy of God. The psalmist you heard in the psalm that was read from Psalm 98 this joyful exuberance with all of creation entering into it, where floods clap their hands and trees and rivers shout and mountains declare the glory of God. The whole cosmos enters in. And the psalmist, another place, declares, "You show me the path of life, O God. In your presence there is fullness of joy." Numerous places we read in the Psalms that God rejoices over creation. The cosmos itself shares this joy. And we observe then in the deliverance by God, of God delivering people from slavery. And one of my favorite Old Testament passages comes from Exodus, in the prophetess Miriam, Aaron's sister, who takes a tambourine in her hand. And all the women went out with her, the text said, with tambourines in their hands and with dancing. And Miriam sang to them, "Sing to the Lord, for he has done gloriously. Horse and rider are thrown into the sea." What a picture of joy, this dancing and singing and acting silly. The surprising good news of God's deliverance and salvation. And the joy because of what God has done continues on in the New Testament as we experience the joy of the incarnation, God coming to us as this baby, this infant baby, and his mother and his father rejoice. And there is a joy in the sorrow, the great sorrow, as a message begins to sink in that Christ is alive, had once been dead. Following his cruel death on the cross, all the violence and the evil are absorbed, and death is not the end. And while there, this good news of deliverance and forgiveness and freedom for all the cosmos, we realize that it's not yet complete, and our joy is not yet complete. And we resonate with the Apostle Paul, who says, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor until now, while we wait for the redemption of our bodies." Now, I wonder if sometimes we are hesitant to express joy because of all the suffering in the world. The logic may go, how can we be joyful when others are suffering? When those of our own community are feeling pain and sorrow. As I was preparing the sermon, thinking about it, Mary came home with the news that friends of ours, Ray and Brenda Martin Hurst's son, 24-year-old son, was tragically killed in a car accident on Monday morning. Can we learn to hold together both joy and suffering? Does suffering and tragedy need to rob us of our joy, or can there, even in the face of those things, be this underlying foundation of God's presence with us in the suffering? Desmond Tutu, who faced plenty of suffering himself, says this, and I quote, "Discovering more joy does not save us from the inevitability of hardship and heartbreak. In fact, we may cry more easily, but we will also laugh more easily. Perhaps we are just more alive. Yet, as we discover more joy, we can face suffering in a way that ennobles rather than embitters. We have hardship without becoming hard. We have heartbreaks without becoming broken." Desmond Tutu. We will always face hardship and heartbreaks in our lives. But will we choose to focus on that, or on the God who walks with us through those heartbreaks and hardships? Will we be beaten down by cynicism and be people who are joyless? Or will we realize that God's presence still is with us? Will we see God's gifts as life and hope, and in the process find life and hope for ourselves and for others? Will our lives be caught up in the prayer that Jesus taught us to pray, where the kingdom of God is as present on earth as it is in heaven? May we, in this continuing Easter season, do well to continue to reflect on the big story of the resurrection and to continue to frame and reframe it in ways that are truly good news, not just for us, but for the whole cosmos. And to reflect then on the small joys, as we've named, committing ourselves to the practice of gratitude, noticing the things that God is doing among us in the ordinary things of life. I end with Anne Lamott, a quote from her, who through her life had seen plenty of suffering and sadness dealing with her own alcoholism, but then transforming that into being a wonderful author of many different books. So I end with a quote from Anne Lamott. Gratitude begins in our hearts and then dovetails into behavior. It almost always makes you more willing to serve, which is where joy resides. It means that you are willing to stop being a jerk. When you are aware of all that has been given to you in your lifetime in the past few years, it's hard not to be humbled, and it's easy to know that we need to give back. Amen.